Inside the Collective, great to be with you guys on this Tuesday. It is the 12th of May here in 2026. We are in premiere mode right now. You can probably tell. So we pre-recorded this episode. We're getting ready for a lot on the docket, first and foremost, in terms of tonight's content items. But also want to tease what we have coming up on Thursday as well. It's the annual NFL schedule release where all the opponents that you already know about have corresponding dates and times attached to them. So looking forward to our coverage coming up on Thursday night as we welcome in an official new schedule release for the 2026 season. I'm Bobby Trossett, as always, joined alongside Jeff Zarebek and Cole Jackson. Prize Picks, our longstanding sponsor here inside the channel. And as you can see on the screen, we have a brand new one. Let me tell you about it right now before we dive into tonight's content. We're fired up about a brand new partnership, and it is with our friends at SeatGeek. The NFL schedule is coming out this week. It's the time where everybody starts looking at the calendar. We get it, and all of you guys probably get it too. Which Ravens game am I pulling up to this year? I'm sure you're asking yourself something along those lines. Whether it's a big AFC North matchup, a primetime game at the bank, or even a road trip, who knows? SeatGeek makes it super easy to find tickets. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app, and they have more than 70,000 events listed. We're talking concerts, sports, festivals, and everything in between. And one of the best parts is how simple they make it to know if you're actually getting a good deal. Every ticket is rated on a scale from 1 to 10, so you know what you're looking at right away. Green dots, good deal. Red dots, bad deal. So when you're trying to get into a Ravens game without overpaying, SeatGeek has your back, and every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee, so you can buy with confidence. And of course, if you use code COLLECTIVE10, that's COLLECTIVE10, you'll get 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. Again, that's 10% off any tickets with the promo code COLLECTIVE10. Click the link that we have in the description, download the app, have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it for later. Appreciate you, SeatGeek, and welcome to the Collective. Guys, as we always say, when our sponsors, and I should say when our subscribers are supporting our sponsors, they're directly supporting the show, and we continue to reel in the sponsors. So that means that the Collective faithful is showing up and showing out. So appreciate you guys for all the support. Welcome to SeatGeek. And again, if you have tickets coming up here, a need for tickets, whatever it might be, consider using our code COLLECTIVE10. Fellas, let's dive into the content here. Less than a week out from the first of 2 days, the first session of voluntary organized team activities. And as we've mentioned, the schedule release will come first on Thursday night. Lots to get to, Jeff, with our docket on the left-hand side of the screen, as always. But sort of your opening thoughts right now as we get ready for the calm before the storm prior to OTAs.
Well, we talked a little bit about their needs and where we'd fill it and what we would do. And I think, you know, I'm not a big I told you so guy, but I felt like safety would be an area that they would want another veteran. And, you know, they brought in Wallace. I'm sure we'll talk a little more about that later. But I just think this will be a steady stream of moves, Bobby, over the next couple months. I mean, this is how the Ravens operate. They believe that building the 90 man, I guess at this point, but eventually the 53 man is a year round pursuit. They don't see deadlines on adding players. You know, every year you're going to add somebody late in the summer before training camp starts. Every year they'll usually add a veteran during training camp. They often look at the waivers late in training camp. So this will be a steady stream, guys, of moves over the next couple months. And that's kind of where we're at. Ultimately, to make any move of significance, we're probably going to have to see salary cap space cleared at some point. I mean, they're in good shape now, but if you want to go into the regular season with sort of a buffer and a little room to do what you're going to want to do in the regular season, you need to add there. I think OTAs is going to be an exciting time. I think, the schedule release and OTAs. So this is a fun part of the offseason where, you know, you learn a lot more about the Ravens. You learn where they're going to play and how tough their schedule should be on paper. And then you're going to learn a little more about the team next week. You know, I think Jesse Minter hasn't volunteered a ton about injuries and stuff like that. So next week will be our first opportunity to get a look at who's out there, who's not. And, you know, he did say at some point this offseason he'll update the injury situation. So maybe maybe next Tuesday's the day where we start to get some answers on some of those questions.
And we get a good answer of what type of injury information is he going to be after going through 10 years or what was it, 20 years of John Harbaugh, which will be pretty interesting. I think that'll be it'll be interesting to see how close to the vest he plays it just in terms of information. But yeah, we're kind of in the dead season. Like, let's be real here. This is kind of we're just trying to get through the next few weeks. Everybody's starting to chomp at the bit for football. And, you know, the big question is going to be, how does the Ravens continue to refine this roster? Kayvon Wallace was a bit of a surprise in the sense that wasn't, I guess, the top target that I was expecting was a safety. But to be surprised that they added a safety.
You don't listen to me, Cole. You don't listen
to
me.
That's true. Yeah, I'm just over here trying to get a starting center, and Jeff needs a fifth safety in the DB room.
Let's show some patience and perspective here. This attitude, he's not a starting center. Like, I got into it with a couple people on X.
You getting into it on X? I can't see.
Well,
it.
Not really. I was kind of polite, but kind of smug as per usual. But like this whole thing, like, they don't have a center. Like, yeah, we've discussed this. Their best center option is currently in Chicago, and maybe they'll like what they see of Logan Jones. My colleague Dan Weeder for The Athletic in Chicago wrote a piece about whether Logan Jones is ready to start. It's a talking point there too. And maybe they'll like what they see, and Garrett Bradbury will be a Raven at some point, but I didn't mean Cole, and you know this, but I didn't mean safety was the priority, but it's one of those spots you could fill for the league minimum. You get a guy that probably, you know, some of these guys out there don't really care about that they're missing OTAs. They're in no rush. They'll wait. They want to get paid. Those guys aren't the guys signing right now, right? These are the kind of signings you make this time of year. And I think certain veterans are more likely to go off closer to training camp when it starts getting kind of to the time where you need to know where you're going to play and whether there's a spot for you. So I don't think it was a priority by any means, but it was a very easy and cheap, hole to fill. You do need a fourth safety. I don't think Wallace is guaranteed to be on the team in week one. I think probably most of the moves they're going to make over the next couple months are not involving guys who are guaranteed to be on the team in week one. There'll be a couple probably that are, but this is what you get. These are back-end roster moves that you make at this time of year to fortify depth at different spots.
And the reality is, like, the Ravens have carried five safeties for the last few years because of Kyle Hamilton's role, and there is no fifth safety on the roster. It is Salas Walters or Jaquiz Robinson, who, you know, they're UDFAs. Maybe they'll show out. Maybe they'll take Kayvon Wallace's roster spot the way Ruben Lowry did last year. So he'll have to come in and compete. But to be surprised by the Ravens taking a fifth safety, I think, is just ignoring the history under with Kyle Hamilton on the roster. I think the thing that I thought about the most actually had nothing to do with the safety room. It was more about, what does this mean long-term for Marlon Humphrey? And what I mean by that is, do we see him in more of a role as an outside cornerback with Kyle Hamilton playing more? And this isn't so much related to Kayvon Wallace. He's a depth piece. He'll never start. But you probably brought Hawkins in to play significant snaps. You have Malachi Starks, a former first-round pick. So, like, Kyle Hamilton's your nickel. What does that mean for Marlon Humphrey? I think that's kind of become more the discussion in my head. And then Kayvon Wallace is your depth piece behind Hawkins and Starks more so than the other piece. But that's kind of where my brain went immediately, just because I am expecting Kyle Hamilton to be in that Derwin James role, which really reduces the need for a true slot cornerback, except when they're in the dime. So I think it's going to be interesting, especially around Marlon Humphrey's contract, just because there is the potential for an adjustment there at some point. You're paying him a lot of money. Is he going to compete with Awuzie for an outside spot, or is he just going to be that rotational nickel guy that also plays a lot in the dime? And keep in mind that they could play a lot heavier dime given Kyle Hamilton's experience after last year playing in the box as a pseudo linebacker. So, I mean, factoring all those things in, that's actually more where my mind went, was just, what does this mean for Marlon Humphrey?
Yeah, I'm real curious to see if they use any corners at safety. Do they, you know, do they have a guy who rotates kind of around, and do they give one of the, I mean, look, I think we all remember when TJ Tampa was drafted, there were some people who thought he was going to wind up at safety. When you look at the depth chart right now at corner, where is TJ Tampa's spot? You're getting into the point of his career. He's in his third year now, where at some point you have to see what you have. You need to try to get him on the field. I think last year he had a really solid preseason training camp. He looked good at times in the regular season, but you know, it's hard to see where that role is. But you know, as Cole said, Marlon Humphrey's been a fascinating conversation for me. I'm still surprised Broderick Washington's on this roster without a known contract adjustment. I'm still surprised Marlon Humphrey is, not that he's on this roster, I'm still surprised that we haven't heard or seen in the whole NFLPA database any evidence that he's taken some sort of contract restructure. But I said it earlier, if you're going to make more significant moves, you're going to need to create salary cap space at some point. So Marlon's number sort of looms large there when you talk about some of the moves they could make.
Do we all agree that Cheeto was their best press corner a year ago?
I would probably say that. I think his rough patch coincided with when he was hurt, and that's kind of been his, for lack of a better word, bugaboo. He gets banged up, and you know, he has a hard time playing all 17, but he had a really good year last year, Bobby. I would absolutely agree with you on that.
Yeah, Nate Wiggins is more of a bump and run corner, right? So yeah, he was in a really bad spot playing off man, but I think under Minter and more of a bump and run role, he'll be in a much better position.
Yeah, and hey, you know, to just expanding off what Jeff said there, that's why Tennessee was willing to pay $7.5 million for him to suit up elsewhere in the AFC last year. And they were banking on that health issue or unavailability was going to continue to follow him. And it didn't, to a degree. And so the Ravens are hoping, and they're really not banking on it, right? Because it was a cheap deal they brought him back for. I think we were all kind of like, oh, wow, that's – and the whole McChicken thing came because of that tweet. but I think he's a reliable player that obviously they have a ton of familiarity with from his time in Cincinnati in the AFC North. And then hard to believe Wiggins already is getting ready for year three. I guess we probably shouldn't gloss over too, just quickly on a bio here, if you will, on Kayvon Wallace, just because he will have his say in potentially making this 53-man roster as safety number four. He was drafted by the Philadelphia Eagles in 2020. He spent his first 3 years there. All of a sudden, guys, they got a lot of Clemson dudes
on this roster.
Yeah. You know, so he's the latest, a former fourth-round pick out of Clemson by Philadelphia. And then he's just been hopping around since. In 23, he was with Arizona and Tennessee. In 24, he was with Seattle and Mike McDonald's first year. And then last year alone, he was with three different organizations, some of which were practice squad sightings, Giants, Vikings, and Texans. So this is a player that has been around, but he also has a good level of experience. If you guys are, you know, betting men for the moment, is he safety number four when it's all said and done, Cole?
I would say yeah, because I picture Keandre Jackson as more of that special team ace guy. And keep in mind, Kayvon Wallace throughout all of his stops has been a special teamer, which I think is really important. We talked about that for those last few roster spot guys. And like, we know what Keandre Jackson can do on special teams. Like, he runs around like a madman, and I love it. But, you know, do you want him in the game if Hawkins or Starks go down? That's where I think Kayvon Wallace comes into play, because he's played an extremely versatile role. If you go through his snap positioning, he plays deep, he plays in the box, he plays in the slot. So he moves all over the defensive formation. If you go back to when he was coming out of college, he was actually his best role at Clemson was in the overhang role, which is actually a role that Trenton Simpson played before becoming more of a Will linebacker in his draft year, which is kind of interesting. Kayvon Wallace was in that role. A couple years later, it's Trent Simpson, which is kind of this, it's that star role that Clemson's defense has used over the years. So again, that versatile role makes me think that he'd be a really good fit in what Jesse Minter's looking for in terms of versatility, moving guys all over the formation, playing that cover four heavy scheme. So I think Kayvon Wallace is a really nice fit as a guy that can come in, contribute on special teams and be that end of the roster guy. So does that make him safety four? Probably, because I think if those are your five rosters active on game day or five safeties active on game day, you're probably giving Kayvon Wallace snaps before Keandre Jackson.
Yeah, I agree with Cole. I mean, I brought this up last week. Keandre Jackson didn't play a single defensive snap last year. So it would be, you know, he'll get opportunities in training camp and in the preseason. But, you know, that's a position that I think it's good to have a veteran. It's good to have a veteran who has starting experience. He'd basically justify his game day role because of his ability to play special teams. I don't know how much you want to see Malachi Starks on special teams. I know he played it a bunch last year. So, yeah, and that's the other thing about Wallace. Look, I haven't seen the contract, but looking, it's probably pretty close to the vet minimum. And that's not, you know, I've talked it up and said, hey, I think you need a vet there, but it's also not a spot where you want to spend significant money to fill. I mean, we still are talking about the fourth safety. So that makes him a pretty good candidate where you could bring somebody in who's experienced. Obviously, he's been some Seattle. I know there's going to be some similarities between those defenses. So you just don't know yet what you're going to get from Keandre Jackson at safety. And quite frankly, guys, Keandre Jackson's position here is irrelevant. He's on the team for special teams. I don't expect that now that John Harbaugh's gone for them to suddenly not consider special teams as part of the roster process. You still have Anthony Levine in the building. You still have Randy Brown in the building. You still have Eric DaCosta, who knows all about like the flexibility on special teams in those last couple roster spots. So Keandre Jackson's a guy that, you know, Levine has really gotten close with him. I think Keandre Jackson showed up to his press conference. Levine's kind of been kind of his biggest supporter in the building. Loves what he sees about him. So yeah, I see him on this team, but yet I still see a room for a fourth safety. And maybe Wallace is that guy. It certainly looks like it now, but we have a long way to go here before you need to kind of worry about the roster numbers.
Let me put both of you guys on the spot here, and this will fall under the breakout candidate section before we dive into Eric DaCosta's recent comments from over the weekend on The Fan. Knowing that Jesse comes in with this level of pedigree, proven track record as a defensive play caller, and the fact that every single defensive player that is on this 53-man roster will be getting some level of fresh start, whether it's Trey Hendrickson as a new guy, a rookie coming in, or anybody that's being inherited by Jesse. Two guys that are entering contract years that come to mind, Tavius Robinson and Trenton Simpson. Which player has the chance of having a higher impact given the newness that Jesse Minter brings to Baltimore? Either one of you can go first. There's two names that I think are, you know, are they role players? Maybe Tavius can be categorized as more than that. Trenton certainly carved out a role last year, as we saw after Teddy Buchanan went down. But your thoughts on which player has the better recipe, knowing everything that's changed in Baltimore, to have a high impact year in the middle of a contract season for them?
I would go with Trenton Simpson, because with Trenton Simpson, he has outstanding it's kind of a funny comparison because they could not be polar opposite in terms of strengths and weaknesses. And what I mean by that is Trenton Simpson is a highly athletic guy that just hasn't been able to mentally process the game at the NFL level. Tavius Robinson is your blue collar, hand in the dirt, do all the dirty work. Not going to wow you physically in terms of his athletic ability, but you know, he'll set the edge, he'll do all the little things right. And Trenton Simpson does all the little things not right at this point throughout his career. And it's really going to be, when does that click for Trenton Simpson, if it does? Because if he starts to get down the little nuances of how he reads plays, how he fills gaps, that sort of thing, paired with his athleticism, I think he's got an extremely high ceiling. So I would say in a defensive scheme that might be a little bit more simplistic for the linebacking core, I think that greatly benefits Trenton Simpson. I'm not sure Tavius Robinson's ever going to be more than a role player. And that's not disrespect towards Tavius Robinson. He has a very specific role and he plays it extremely well. He's your enforcer on the defensive line. He's going to set the edge. He's going to do all the dirty work. He's going to play the run extremely well. He just doesn't have enough juice as a pass rusher, and that's fine. That's not his role. That's not what they brought him here to do. Can he get there? Of course he can. Any player can develop and start to show signs, but even when you go through some of his sack production, a lot of it isn't from him, you know, bending the edge and making an outstanding pass rush move. A lot of it's, you know, the dirty work, catching, you know, high effort rushes, that sort of thing, which again, it's fine. But I would say the higher ceiling player is going to be Trenton Simpson. And I'm wondering that in a more simplistic scheme with a coach upgrade on the defensive side of the ball, maybe they get him into the right spot.
Hey, and Jeff, yeah. I was just going to say, if you could add on after your answer to the second half, anything that you may have heard this offseason recently about Teddy's recovery timetable, that'd be good too.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, and, you know, I actually agree with Cole there. And part of it is because Teddy's, you know, you just don't know what you have right now. You know, like, again, you don't know when he's going to be cleared. By all accounts, he's doing great, Bobby. Like, he's really attacked his rehab. That's a tough kid. Wants it. I think he was improving every week last year, which is the shame that this was his first opportunity to have like an NFL offseason, and he's missing out, and he's going to be missing out on snaps with the new defensive staff. But I have not heard anything that he's had any setbacks. All systems appear to be going in the right direction there. But when is he going to be available, and when is he going to look and feel like himself? Those are so unpredictable, with those knee injuries. And just because you're on the field doesn't mean you're ready to play, if you know what I mean. I mean, we've seen that every year, seemingly, where a guy comes back from injury, just really doesn't look like himself until a good bit of time elapsed. So that's why I would say Trent Simpson, he could play a role right away. He could have a significant role on defense. You know, he's going to be one of their core special teamers and play a ton on special teams, and he could have a role there defensively. I honestly thought Trent Simpson played well down the stretch last year. I mean, I don't want to judge player performance from tackles, but he was very active. I think he figured some stuff out. Looked like the game was slowing down a little bit for him, which was always the, you know, instinctually and all that stuff, which was always sort of the problem. One of the problems that he had early on in his career. The only thing I will say about this, Bobby, is what happens if Justin Matabike isn't ready, right? How much do you use Tavius Robinson inside where as a rusher, where maybe he could get some favorable matchups with guards? I mean, I thought Tavius Robinson showed some stuff as a pass rusher last year. Now, he's never going to be this dynamic, explosive guy, but he's a hard trier, right? And he plays hard and plays with physicality. And I think he had 5 sacks last year, and he missed some time, right? He missed some time with did he break his foot? So, you know, I think if they need him and they need him to move inside, that could change my opinion a little bit. But, you know, with Calais on board, if Matabike is healthy and Travis Jones showed he belongs out on the field, I don't know how many snaps he gets in there if all 3 of those are the case, but we'll see. So I think a lot of that question, Bobby, depends on injuries. It depends on Teddy Buchanan's recovery and when he's ready to go, and it depends on whether Nnamdi Matabike is ready to go from the jump.
Travis Jones, just to be clear, led the way at 5, and a half sack below him was Tavius Robinson. In a lot less games played, to your point there. He played in 10. Travis played in 16.
Yeah, I mean, and Tavius came on last year. I thought Tavius clearly You definitely saw some progress with him as a pass rusher last year.
Yeah. And, you know, Cole, I know, you guys are ingrained within the film community, Coach Evans, All 22, Derek Coleman, everybody that's involved there. I can remember having Derek on not long after he started picking up on this third down hybrid specialist role, if you will, that Trenton started to step in at. And he was playing it well.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. They, that was one of the best things Zach Orr did over the last 2 years was that kind of, you know, they would use almost, they'd walk Rowe and Trenton Simpson up to the line, and they basically just want to use Kyle Hamilton in it too, and show basically sim pressure looks, and then unleash Trent Simpson as either a blitzer or in a man coverage spot with a blitz in front of it. And in a more simplistic role, and that was kind of what I was referring to, in a more simplistic role, I think he executed much better. We also know that when he was at Clemson, he was used as an edge rusher at times. So that where I think you get to the best spot, and what I think Jesse Minter should do, is go back and look at how, you know, Roquan Smith and Patrick Queen operated at their best together, because it wasn't in. It was creating chaos in the second level of the defense. It was using a ton of crossing blitzes with the linebackers, using them in stunts, just to get them active. And then what you do in coverage behind that, I don't think we ever got to a point where Zach Orr was able to do that consistently. But that refined role is really what unearthed Patrick Queen and kept him in a very simplistic role where he had a ton of success with the Ravens in that last contract year. So that's what I would like to see, is, you know, kind of a reversion back to that. And that's something that we've seen Jesse Minter do before, is get his linebackers involved and, you know, focus on his coverage shell behind it, because it's so schematically concrete.
I guess in a way of putting a bow on this, if Nnamdi is ready, it's a clean sweep. We all think Trenton would have more potential based on workload moving forward. So let us know what you think in the comment section.
I've been asking for them to rush Tavius Robinson inside since he was a rookie, and they just don't want to do it. I don't know. That's when John first started initially ignoring all my phone calls.
Appreciate you guys being with us here on this Tuesday. Before we get to the Jadeveon Clowney conversation, let's go make some picks, shall we? Courtesy of Prize Picks, our sponsor here that's continuing to work with us as Jay-Z gets fired up for NBA playoffs second round. Okay, wait a second now. First and foremost,
I don't like these because Jeff always fact checks how badly we did, and then he makes me feel bad for it. So
he does. But Jeff, let me just ask, because you're a hooper by nature, by heart. You love the game. You love the association. Well, you don't love the association. You love college basketball, I think. But is LeBron really going to go out without a farewell tour?
Oh, no. He'll be back. No. He'll do the whole farewell tour.
Yeah, I don't see. I mean, he was pretty good this year. Like, I don't know. I'd have a hard time believing that he's going to go out. The question is, where does he go? Does he team up for one legitimate run? I mean, is there, I'm not saying there's any dislike, or does he feel like being back with Luka and what else they have there is the best way to chase one more title? Does he want to do sentimental and try to be the final piece to trying to get that young Cavaliers team? Not really young. They're not young anymore, but trying to get that team over the hump. Does he want a team with Steph Curry in Golden State for one last ride? I mean,
what would be ironic is, what if he goes back to OKC and does the reverse Kevin Durant and joins them and just hitches onto that wagon?
Jesus. I mean, that team is ridiculous. They have 11 or 12 players that they can put in with zero drop off. I love, like, you know, I'm a Knicks fan, and
they look good right now.
What's that?
They look good.
Right now. I mean, holy, you know, crap. I'm negative as all heck, so I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop. But I love all the people like, oh, yeah, they're good, but give me a break. They're not going to beat the Thunder. Well, who is? Like, I mean, like, why is that an insult to them that they're not going to beat the Thunder in a 7-game series? I mean, Bobby Wiggins from the Maryland kid. That went to university, you know, like, that kid could be at the very least a six man or a starter on any of their team. He's barely seeing minutes over there, and this guy was a key component of their championship team. It's just an embarrassment of riches. And then they got more first round picks. Yeah, they're loaded, man. They're loaded.
Hey, Jeff, I wonder where Canadian boy wants LeBron to go for 1 year.
Dad, no.
Come up to LeBronto. He owned us for so many years. Oh, it's embarrassing.
Oh, let's make some picks, shall we?
Can we place a bet on Wembanyama's how fast his elbow is going to hit someone's face tonight? Because that was the most vicious hit I've seen.
13 boards.
Gotta go more, right?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, he's going to be a man possessed tonight, knowing he let the team down with the early ejection. He's going to be the best player on the floor, and it's not going to even be close.
Anthony Edwards, 26.5 points, more or less.
My only concern about that is that what's the series? Is that 2-2? Yeah. So they're back in San Antonio for one.
Yeah.
My only concern about Edwards, he's playing a lot of minutes. He's fresh off the injury. If San Antonio's up big, do they shut him down pretty early? Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
he played really good last game though. Like,
he was unbelievable.
Yeah. I would take the over because, like, his minutes ramped up. He went from 24 in game two. That's where I was like, oh, maybe he won't be full going.
What's that one, Bobby, top right, McDaniels?
11.5.
He's been so good.
11.5 points?
Yep.
Oh, he'll get that by the end of the first quarter.
He's been so good.
There you have it. Jeff's standing on business. So there we go. Those are our picks for tonight.
He's a good player. And he wants the smoke. He's always looking to get into it after the whistle.
There you have it. Prize Picks. We appreciate them for the continued support. We will revisit those. Remember, we've been mostly focusing lately on NFL futures, so we won't be able to look at those until the season, obviously, is underway. And in some cases, it's full season, more or less. So we'll be able to look at the NBA on Thursday night, which we will, and see how we did based on Game 5 tonight between the Spurs and T-Wolves. Okay, fellas, second half of the show underway. Thanks for being with us tonight, guys. Like the video, subscribe to the channel if you could. We're coming up on 8,000 subscriptions. We'd love to hit that at some point soon. Hit that notification bell, and if you want to become a channel member or give membership, you know how to do that via the join tool. Eric DaCosta has been on the media tour since the draft, as he so often does this time of year. And over the weekend,
gone on our show.
Not on this one.
Yeah.
Not on this one.
The tour is not that wide-reaching, apparently.
It's a light tour for him this offseason. Yeah. Maybe we'll get him next time. Yeah. Maybe we'll get him bye week.
Maybe we'll kick the Canadian off and we can just get him. It's him.
Why doesn't Cole go through Lacey, their Twitter buds? She can make it happen.
I'll send a text.
Anyway, on Saturday, 105.7 The Fan has daytime programming. Bruce Cunningham, longtime sports personality, and Femi Iyanbadejo, part of the 2000 Super Bowl winning team. Femi asked him directly about Jadeveon Clowney, and here is Eric's answer, courtesy of The Fan.
It depends. You think, you know, right now we've got, you know, Trey, we feel really good about him. We got Tavius, we got Mike Green, and we just drafted Zion, not to mention Adisa. So it's hard to give these guys enough reps as it is at times, especially the way we use them, where we rotate these guys, and most of our guys are getting somewhere between 30 and 40 reps. One thing I learned years ago, we traded for Yannick Ngakoue, and
right.
As a player that I loved, I loved him coming out, and I always enjoyed his game. Great pass rusher, and he was like really talented, but he didn't want to come off the field, and that wasn't the way that we used our outside backers. That wasn't the way that Wink used his outside backers. We had a rotation. We had Judon, we had Ngakoue, and we had, I think, Zardarius maybe, and we had some other guys, and he didn't want to come off the field. And I get that mentality, but that mentality is not, you know, for everybody. And it's our team. It's a matter of reps. And so, you know, I think we could use a player like that, you know, talent-wise, of course. It then becomes, though, does that now stunt the development of some of these younger players? And we feel really good about Zion, and we feel really good about Mike Green, not to mention Trey. It's going to be hard to get him off the field. So it becomes a matter of reps. And when you have those at that position, those guys don't historically play special teams. So then it becomes hard to get them all up on game day. And that's another factor because that body type typically, unless you're Nadelius Thomas, those guys typically don't excel on special teams. So if you're going to dress four guys, that means the fifth guy and the sixth guy are going to be inactive because you have to have some special teams guys up. So never say never. I think some of it will depend on our evaluation of these guys over the coming month or so and into the offseason program as we get closer to like the end of June. We signed Clowney years ago in August, I think, maybe the first week of training camp, week of training camp. But I think what we want to do is assess what we have and make a decision based off of that.
Sure.
All right, fellas, a couple different things to unpack there. And let's revisit the Yanni comments in a second, because that's kind of a telling revisit, if you will, from a few years ago that may have led to his demise in Baltimore. But Jeff, for starters, if I'm to give you my read on this, let me know if you think it's accurate or inaccurate. And I'm going to kind of draw comparisons here to two different position rooms, wide receiver and edge rusher. My read on those comments right there are that both rooms are full for the moment. God forbid there's an injury or maybe an evaluation that's not up to snuff in the coming months ahead. It's not going to be, there won't be additions to those rooms barring one of those two, if not another scenario playing out. You say what?
I agree with that. I think that comment was pretty telling by Eric DaCosta. And we've had this debate on this show, guys. It's not that you wouldn't want Jadeveon Clowney, and it's not that Jadeveon Clowney wouldn't help them, but it's who does he impact? And does he render Mike Green and Zion Young into really low part-time players, guys who are kind of grappling with you know, Green's snap count gets cut by 40-50% and Zion is not getting on the field? Like, and he's right there, and that's the thing. Okay, but what if one of those guys get injured? Okay, that's always the fear, but what if they don't? And who does it, like, how does it impact the other players? How does it impact the mix? And will Jadeveon Clowney be okay? Is that really the best spot for him in a part-time role? You know, can he succeed for being a part-time guy, or does he need to play, you know, a certain number of snaps to still be effective? Now, I'm looking at last year in Dallas, he played about 45%. Of the snaps, and he was damn effective. So maybe he could succeed in that role. Maybe he would succeed in that role. But I think it's the give and take, guys. Like, okay, we know what he brings, but what does his addition subtract from us? How does it impact the other guys? What are we losing from him being here and not playing Mike Green and Zion Young and maybe Tavius not playing as much? So those are the tough decisions I think you have to make. Jadeveon Clowney is a guy that has always been willing to sign late. He, you know, I remember it like I always will remember him just striding up to the practice field that one year and be like, wait a second, that's Jadeveon Clowney. You know, when they signed him. And I'm sure Jadeveon Clowney doesn't need a full training camp. And maybe you spend these times, you got OTAs next 3 weeks, and then you got mini camp, and maybe you have a better idea of where Mike Green and Zion and to a lesser extent Adisa Isaac are at. And maybe you consider it later this offseason and still available. But this is an organization that drafts and develops players. And that is their backbone of an organization. And you need to develop players, you need to play players. And you can't just keep drafting guys on day two, early day two picks. Isaac's a little later day two, and just not playing them and keep bringing in veterans over them every year. So my guess is that's what it amounts to. I could see them bringing in maybe a lesser veteran who may be comfortable, like this year's version of Carl Lawson, except maybe they play him this year. Or, you know, there's a ton of those guys out there, Bobby, that you could kind of bring in. That's one market where the you know, the supply at this point certainly appears to exceed the demand for some of these veteran pass. I mean, like, Bosa's still available, right? And yeah. And he's only one of probably 8 to 10 accomplished edge rushers still available. And real quick, Bobby, I do remember the Ngakoue story. And yeah, it was very clear it was not a fit, and we all kept saying it. And it was kind of like the defensive version of Deontay Johnson, where it just was clear where, okay, it wasn't going to work given the role they envisioned for him. And that Titans playoff win where they stomped on the logo and Lamar ran right off the field, didn't shake anyone. Remember that whole game? And they kind of exacted some revenge. And that defense was over the moon. As we talked about Calais Campbell in that game, and Derek Wolfe was a monster in that game. Pernell McPhee was a monster in that game. And they were all happy. But after that game, there was a certain outside linebacker who didn't play many snaps because it really wasn't a fit against the Tennessee's running attack that year, who was not happy and who made Wink Martindale know he was not happy. So that's why that kind of was never going to work. And sure, that thought process has to loom large going forward. They do not want Zion Young and Mike Green to be stapled on the bench playing 10 to 12 snaps a game. That's just not the way they feel like is best for their development.
And keep in mind with Clowney, he didn't sign until like September 15th with Dallas last year. So it was in season. I mean, I guess it was only after week one, but he's not in a hurry to sign. So you see what you get out of them in training camp. You know, maybe like, again, this is that balance that the Ravens have been trying to find for a number of positions over the last couple of years. Like they went young at edge rusher last year. They went young at guard last year and both seemed to burn them. But at some point you have to rely on the guys you draft, and you know, it would be tough to go in. You've already made your marquee investment in the edge room and getting Trey Hendrickson. So you got a guy that's been a top consistent, top 10, top five edge rusher over the last few years. Now you got to give them, you know, now that those guys, they got the guy across from them, now it's time for them to step up. So I think with that in mind, you really rely on Mike Green and Zion Young doing that. But at the same time, if you get to the point where you're not able to generate pressure again, you got Trey Hendrickson getting double teamed and no one else is taking advantage. If someone like that is available, maybe you consider doing it sooner rather than later. But that will definitely relegate them to bench duty. I think the added piece of this is Jadeveon Clowney being a good run defender is like there's always going to be a role for him in a defense because he is good against the run. So he's not just like a Yannick that's like just a pass rusher. So, you know, maybe factor that into your decision making as well. But you're definitely giving away some of Mike Green or Zion Young snaps.
And just because it's in front of me. 8.5 sacks last year in 13 games with Dallas, 10 quarterback hits. You go back to 23 in the AFC Championship game run, 9.5 sacks, 19 quarterback hits. He hadn't hit numbers like that in the sack department in years. You got to go all the way back to 2017 when he had 9.5 as a member of the Houston Texans, where, of course, he became Jadeveon Clowney there, even though some of those were injury-plagued seasons. So,
I mean, they subject us to the Cowboys every freaking week on the networks. So you can't ignore them even if you watch, even if you try. And I'd be watching the game. I'm like, who the hell is that? Oh, that's Jadeveon Clowney, man. Some of those games, he was one of the best players in the field. The guy is remarkable. The guy is such a specimen. I love him, too. He's a character. He's, you know, he's a good, charismatic guy to talk to. Yeah, he wants his, and Jadeveon is going to take care of himself, and he's not a type of guy who's going to leave a lot of money on the table. I love him. I hate to say no, you stay away, but I understand. I understand the situation is a little more in depth. I'd continue to take my time there, evaluate who you have. And look, guys, the other factor of this is every year there's multiple edge rushers traded at the deadline. If you get to the deadline and your pass rush, you go out and get this year's version of Draymond Jones or whoever it is. It seems like there's a pass rusher or two traded at every deadline. They got Ngakoue at the deadline several years back. You know, that's a spot you could probably get somebody at the deadline if you're not getting off to the start you would hope to that area.
Yeah. And along the lines of what we also have clarity on as of less than a week ago, since the last time we were live, David Njoku is off the free agent
market. Oh.
He has been signed. Jeff, we knew this was maybe the direction that he was heading out of Baltimore. A lot of folks in your mentions, I'm sure, were all over this idea of bringing the former Brown to Baltimore. Instead, he goes to the Chargers on a 1 year worth up to $8 million after 9 years with Cleveland. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think they were intrigued by the idea of adding him, but they're focused on getting younger at the position, getting younger and faster at the position. And he was sort of a backup plan if they didn't, if the draft didn't go the way they wanted. But it never hurts to bring in a guy and take a look. I said this last week when we were talking about it. I didn't really see, again, a reserve to that tight end who's not going to play special teams. You got all these pass catchers. You brought in two new receivers. You brought in two new tight ends. Like, just do the math. You can't keep five tight ends, right? And you signed Smythe for a reason, for a certain role. You drafted the other two guys, Quavis and Hibner, and you know, Mark Andrews isn't going anywhere. So, to me, he struck me as a luxury item and a guy you bring to training camp. And if he look great, okay, great. He's going to be a good piece for you, but I did not see that one as a necessity. Again, we're at the stage of the camp where we're all in Cole Jackson mode. Bring us everything. Like, we can't.
I was going to throw Taysom Hill out. What do we think of Taysom Hill?
I didn't even know he was still available. Is he really, Cole?
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
See, I'm pretty good at this.
Yeah. Bring him in too. But yeah, we are at that stage where, yeah, and look, but you have to pick and choose. There's only so much room you have. There's only so much roster flexibility you have. You want to look at certain young players at certain spots. And so you just can't have everything you want. It just doesn't make sense. There is a salary cap exists, despite what some people may have you believe. Hey, you know what was awesome? Speaking of salary cap, I was picking up my wife Mother's Day dinner the Sunday night. We were on the road. We had a wedding. You know, we had a wedding to go to. So we got home kind of late Sunday, which messed with my actually, it gave me an excuse not to make elaborate Mother's Day plans for the missus. So that was nice. And I went and got takeout at a restaurant, and it's pouring, and I have my hood up, looking like an unsavory character as usual. And somebody's calling my name at this restaurant. And who is it but Brian McFarland, who just celebrated a birthday. Ravens salary cap guy. It was a pleasure to see Brian, one of my favorite people, one of the smartest people I think any of us know. So it was good to see Brian. So he deserves a shout out.
Happy birthday, Brian.
Yeah, and Brian's awesome. I don't know if Brian has a kid or what, but, you know, maybe happy Mother's Day to those in Brian's life as well.
There we go.
That is awesome. I thought you were going to say maybe like a rogue collective subscriber. You know,
I haven't seen one of those since I went to Disney World and I was in the Star Wars section of the park and somebody bum rushed me.
Right. It was me.
Yeah.
I nice ran up Jeff with a lightsaber.
Nice guy, but it was a little awkward.
Making your in-laws think, man, who do we have in our family now? I mean, come on.
Yeah, seriously. Although everything that's Star Wars related is awkward to me, but that's another topic.
Oh, God, you're going to set off the Star Wars people.
I mean, I need to piss somebody off every show we do, so I'm gonna stay hot with that.
Hey, before we get to just some tidbits on the schedule release and we'll get on out of here, Cole, let's take the realistic component of it out because it's probably unrealistic right now given where the Ravens stand. But because you like the unreal – no. Stephon Diggs, he was cleared in the court system within the last week or so, found not guilty of assaulting his private chef in a pay dispute. We know that he had a very productive 2025 in New England and got paid nicely – to the tune of a 3-year deal. I think it was $23 million annually for Diggs, and he had a hell of a year. 7 of his 10 or 11 seasons have gone over 1,000 yards, but he's worn out his welcome, I think it's fair to say, at a couple different stops throughout his NFL career. Your thoughts on the Diggs conversation as it relates to, again, whether it's the Njokus of the world, the Joey Boses of the world that now find themselves in this conversation of whether it's realistic or unrealistic, put that aside for a second, your thoughts on the player.
I think if the Ravens want to go with a veteran wide receiver, bringing back a guy like DeAndre Hopkins makes a little bit more sense from a skill set perspective. I think there's certainly an argument for Stephon Diggs' skill set. I think it makes some sense. I think if you look at some of the things that, you saw in Declan Doyle's offense last year. I think it makes sense with Stephon Diggs' skill set. If they're going to go 11 personnel heavy, having a wide receiver who can play in the slot, work the middle of the field, that all makes sense. But it just doesn't scream Ravens move to me to bring in a guy that is seemingly never happy, despite, you know, just going on a Super Bowl run, you know, and going from another contender in Buffalo. Like, it just doesn't seem to work out for whatever reason. Whether that's his fault, I don't really know. I don't follow a lot of the inner drama of other teams, but it just doesn't scream a Baltimore move to me. Would I welcome him onto the team? Yeah, I mean, I don't have to deal with him. So, I mean, you know, he's productive and he's good. So, sure, I think the skill set makes sense. But does the personality, does that make sense? I think there's some valid questions there.
Trossett, is he back with Cardi B?
Apparently at the foundation event for Mother's Day over the weekend, they were seen together. And
yes,
the answer looks like yes.
Oh, that's great to know that those kids are doing well.
Does that move the needle with you, the fact that that relationship is intact?
You just want to see Cardi B at training camp.
No, you know, like Odell Beckham apparently was dating Kim Kardashian when he was on the Ravens, and we never saw her. So.
Who do you think we get on the collective first, Eric DaCosta or Cardi B?
Man, Diggs, I love watching Diggs play. I just don't see it, guys. I just don't see it. There always seems to be a distraction there. There always seems to be an issue there. Another spot where I think they want their young guys to play. You have all these pass catchers. Is there enough of a target share there to appease him? I got asked this last night, and I said it would surprise me if they do. And this is not from what I heard, just knowing how the Ravens typically do business. And look, Eric DaCosta's been pretty clear that they're not really in the wide receiver market at the moment. Could some of it be posturing? Sure, but I don't know what would be gained by that at this point. Some of those guys are just out there looking for jobs. Those are the two markets. It's that and edge rusher. You have a handful of guys on each side where, you know, those guys are going to wind up having to take some probably sweetheart deals if they want to continue to play, because the demand is not as high as what's available. Yeah.
Cole, throw that fandom hat on for the moment. The biggest thing that you're – maybe one or two things that you're looking forward to with the schedule release, and it may not even be like, you know, designing your one road trip down to Baltimore. It could be like the, you know, the game within the game, so to speak. How many primetime games there are allotted to this year? You know, what's on your mind going into Thursday night?
What I'm really interested in is how the schedule there's two things. Where the first thing I always do when I get the schedule is, where's the bye week? Because I think it is so critical to a season. Is I prefer that, you know, week 10, week 11 bye, because that's usually when your injuries pile up. And I'm really interested this year specifically because of the Brazil trip. Where do they put that bye week? And specifically, what games do they surround the Brazil trip with?
Yeah.
Because it looks like it's at 4:30 Eastern time on a Sunday. So do they get a following Monday night game to give them a little extra time? How does the travel impact? What do they have the week before? I would assume they'd kind of squish it with two home games. So then when you're front loading those two home games around a Brazil trip, how does that impact a regular season away road trip later? Like, do you have three road trips in a row? That's usually what I look for when the schedule release comes out. Where's the bye week, and where is like our big set of road games? I also try and find the obviously, like, when are they in Buffalo, because it's close and that sort of thing. So that's, and I know they play in Buffalo this year, so I'll definitely be going to Buffalo this year. It's just too close to not go. So Jeff will have to put up with drunk Cole in Buffalo this year, unfortunately for him.
I just hope the trip's not in November or December. There's less enjoyable road trips in Buffalo in November and December. I think, Bobby, first of all, I think one of the talking points here is, when is their home opener going to be? And I ask that because if you look at the schedule, there's a rugby match. The All Blacks are playing the first weekend of the the first weekend of the NFL regular season. I think that's on a Saturday, September 12th, right? So are you going to have the Ravens at home on a Sunday night or a Sunday, excuse me? Is that going to be their home opener week one, a Sunday home opener? Is that enough? Or is the field going to be torn up where that's going too quick of a turnaround to play at home on Thursday? Because the following week, the Orioles are in town. They have a night game on that Sunday, I believe, but they're in town for a 6-game homestand. So you can't play. I don't see what day you're playing there. And then week three, we know, is in Brazil. So they're not going to be home there. So would NFL make the Ravens start with three on the road? I think that's probably unlikely. But, I mean, who knows? We've seen that before. And if so, that's going to be a ridiculously tough start to the season. If Jeff C. Minter era starts with three games on the road. But we'll see. We'll see how it works out. I always look at, obviously, the primetime games. I think that's what fans want to talk about. I think we all know that one of those primetime games is going to be on the road in Buffalo. After we've talked about this, after Joe Burrow's complaints about all those games always being in Cincinnati, in Baltimore. I think we also know that they're not opening up in Buffalo on a primetime game because the NFL announced that Buffalo will be opening the stadium in week two. Against the Lions. So it does not appear they're going for the second straight year week one drama with the Ravens at Buffalo. So it'll be interesting. I mean, you could look up and down that schedule and pick out 6 or 7 games that you feel like could be in prime time. I mean, either Steelers game could be, either Bengals game could be. Obviously, the Texans versus the Ravens now is a big game. Buffalo, Chargers, with all that's entailed now with Harbaugh and Minter in Baltimore. So it'll be interesting. Tampa's always a kind of an exciting opponent that they've been in prime time before, the Ravens and Tampa. So I'd expect you'll get a pretty heavy slate of primetime games. We'll see. But the thing I'm going to be watching is, when are they going to be home? Will they make them start out with three on the road? My guess is no, but I mean, I guess that has to be considered a possibility when you look at the schedule. And the other thing, guys, is one thing you couldn't do is you couldn't play week two on that Monday night. Because then you'd have a short week going into Brazil, which is completely crazy and unfair. You wouldn't make them, with traveling to Brazil, be on a short week already. So it'll be interesting. I would be surprised if the Ravens take that week four bye, though. I would think they'll want it pushed back later in the season. But I'd also think they'd want as much time as possible, which could lead to a week four Monday night game in Baltimore, because that would give them another extra day. And maybe that's going to be the home opener, a week four Monday night.
That's going to be the Chargers game.
That would be fun. That would be really fun. So there are a lot of possibilities, guys, a lot of possibilities. This leaking three games a day is asinine. and by the time their big, highly touted schedule show comes on at 8 o'clock, I'm guessing 70% of the games will already have been leaked on Twitter. But this is what we do here. A lot of eyewash.
couple things I'm thinking about before we get on out of here is we know how outspoken Cincinnati's been, Joe Burrow's been, about the lack of home primetime games up against the Ravens. It would not surprise me if they get a Thursday night game against the Ravens at their place in Cincy. And then sticking with the AFC North, which is more probable in that final Week 18 slate? Is it Pittsburgh or is it Cincinnati to kick the entire, or I should say, to culminate the regular season?
Hasn't it been Pittsburgh like 9 of the last 10 years? I feel like it's always Pittsburgh in Week 18.
Yeah, I think they had Cleveland 2 years ago, wasn't it? Wasn't that the game where Zay Flowers got hurt in, right,
against the Browns? Oh, you know what?
Michael Pierce, and might have been both, but okay. Michael Pierce, big man interception.
Yeah, he almost tore his ACL. That was terrifying.
Yeah, you wonder which one they might go. It does feel Pittsburgh, Baltimore feels so synonymous with Week 18, but we'll see. And we will be there for you coming up on Thursday night for the annual NFL schedule release.
Are you pumped, Bobby? What makes you more excited, this or the uniform unveil?
This, I think I get a little bit more up for, just because you and I can start, well, we all can, but just putting our schedule into play. I love getting out of town.
I got a drinking schedule to plan.
you want to get down to Baltimore. You want to maybe get to Brazil, Copacabana Collective, all those visions, you know, bringing them into existence. But yeah, no, I like, selfishly, I like planning my bye week out. I try to leave the country for a few days over the last few years.
You just on the bye week? You leave the country once every 3 weeks.
Well, I went to your, as you both know, I went to your neck of the woods. Not really, but I went to Banff last year. That was pretty cool. Yeah. So, but yeah, I'll take that. I can imagine that you would probably choose the schedule release too. I'll go out on a limb and say that.
Yes, very much so.
Yes.
That's what I mean, it's just funny. Like, the stuff that excites fans, and I get why it excites them, sort of, you know, like, I hate primetime games. They are, especially when, you know, like, you have the kids in play. Like, getting home at 4 o'clock in the morning when you have kids bum rushing into your room at 6:30 a.m. the next morning, that's not a whole lot of fun. And flying at 7 a.m. in the morning after staying in a visiting press box till 3 or 4 a.m., not fun either. I'm not young, like, young and hip like you two. So I as the fewer primetime games, the better, but I fully know that's a selfish outlook because fans love the primetime games. And look, primetime in Baltimore is awesome. That's a great environment, and it's a lot of fun.
It's just ideal as a parent with two little kids that, like, when the game's over, I just yell at people on Twitter. And then I go to bed. You work. So it's just a very different reaction to the game.
The primetime turnaround is without question vicious, no matter what you're doing, fanning, working, anywhere in between.
And it messes the whole week up too. You start behind, like, you know, like, by the time you catch up, it's Thursday already. And that's not a good situation.
No, but,
and now you got to record twice a week.
How about that? How about that? The fatigue, but at least we'll be cutting back, Cole, for June and July. Just Tuesday. that's the tentative plan in play here, but
we'll probably have 9 sponsors by then that we have to satisfy, for God's sakes.
Well, we're working on Southwest right now, so
good. That's one I will use, I promise you that.
A great segue to finish things up. A warm welcome to SeatGeek for being back with us here. For the first time moving forward, new campaign, new sponsorship, use code COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off tickets. And that's across the entire really entertainment industry, not just sports tickets. So looking forward to having them on board. And as always, if you play $5, you'll get $50 instantly in lineups at PrizePicks. So thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to all of you for joining us tonight. We will be back in live formatting, if you were wondering, on Thursday for the schedule release. For Cole, for Jeff, I'm Bobby, signing off from this Tuesday edition. Appreciate you guys. We'll catch up with you later this week.